Well, good afternoon, everybody. Hi again. This is Eric Smith in another edition of the Cross and the Crescent discussion group. I have just looked at my panelists, and the only one that we have here right now is Rad, and he's inside of a grocery store right now, evidently. So what I did was I just resent the link to that group, that Facebook group that I send it out every week, evidently. I don't know what happens to this stuff. I'm not an expert in all of this, and I don't pretend to be. So if you need the link, please post it in the chat. Yeah, you're right, Adam. Sometimes what happened to your group? Where is every? Yeah, I was just saying, everybody didn't get the link, evidently. So let me go back in here to... Adam, you can find, if you want to come on board today, the link is in our Skype group, and I also put it in the other notification Skype group for everybody if you want to go looking for it there. For everybody else, let me go ahead and create a new message. I'm going to create a new message here for everybody. Let me make sure I got everybody on here. And it's hard to do this when you're actually live, but I think what I can do is I can try to chew gum and walk to here. So I'm going to try to type these names and put this in the chat. Okay, today what we're going to do is we are going to be talking about the Constitution of the United States and the Sharia, and how are these two compatible. And I got to thinking about, you know, a novel way to approach this, because when we've been talking about the Sharia here in the show for the past, I don't know how long we've been dealing with it for the last several shows. We've been talking about it. Can you guys hear anything? Can you guys hear me in chat? In chat, can you hear me? Yes, I have sound. Okay, I'm sorry, Alika. I don't know if you might be having some problems on your end. It's typical beginning of the show stuff. Hi, Dominic. It's good to see you. There's Adam. And okay, now we have a couple people in here. So what I wanted to do with today's show, I wanted to start this off from a biblical perspective. After all, our Judeo-Christian foundations are exactly that. They're based on the Judeo-Christian ethic. And one of the things that we are taught in the Bible, I'm going to turn to this. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. And I want to share this on my screen here. Let me stop that, share this. Screen. Here we go. Bada bing, bada boom. Looks like I just shared you to the room. Look at that. I'm even better at rhyming than, oh my gosh, I am a talented host. Okay. Paul teaches us in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians, folks, I'm going to tell you right now what. Hello. Who's yelling at me?
Eric.
Hello. Rad, can you, who's talking to me? You guys are, I'm in a groove here. I know. I'm doing a good job of it. Let me go. Let me do this. Okay. If I don't do it, who's going to do it, Adam? All right. So we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Now, listen to what Paul teaches us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1. If I speak in tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but I do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all of my I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. So what he's telling us and what he's teaching us is that it doesn't matter what we say to people, it doesn't matter how much we know, nothing else matters other than the fact that people can see the love of Christ in us. And then, of course, this little tune pops into your head. Hold on, I'm going to play it right here. I'm not going to play all of it, so y'all can hang on. Here we go. Okay, so this song was written, what is this, 50 years ago? I mean, this song is incredibly old, but the fact of the matter is, here's the fact of the matter is that the truth of that song is just... I didn't mute myself. You just couldn't hear me. You're right. I muted myself during the song. I'm sorry. Okay, so the bottom line is, here's the bottom line. That song written 50 years ago has just as much profundity today as it did the day that it was written. What the world needs now is... Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? What happened? I know what it is. Bottom line is that when we look at what is happening today in Afghanistan, what we see in Afghanistan happening today, and you know, we can go through the laundry list of families being told that if they have daughters that are older than 12 years old, they need to put an X on their door or something on along those lines. If you are a Christian and you have a Bible app or you belong to an underground church of some sort and you are caught, you're going to be killed. And if it isn't bad enough, look what's making a comeback. Finally, the burqa is making a comeback in Afghanistan. When we remember all of these horrific pictures from 20 years ago. Okay, Rad, I'm going to get you a therapist. Who would have thought 20 years after 9/11 that the same group of people that we excoriated for years, and we're talking about, okay, these draconian 7th century practices of subjugating women, repressing minorities, killing people for apostasy, killing people for cutting off hands and limbs, would make a comeback. Whoever thought that this would ever happen again? And at the same time, and I know this is you did, Adam. How did you? Okay, Adam. All right, fine. I asked a rhetorical question. I'm going to get a rhetorical answer. And Adam, you can go up and tell us. Go ahead. And I'm not down on your thing. I'm not going to disagree with you, but just go ahead. I want to hear what your take on this.
That wasn't a rhetorical answer. That was a correct answer. Like, I knew this is going to happen because this is all pure Islamic. And I knew that if America...
I can't hear Adam. Is Adam talking?
Yes, I can hear him. What are we? Are we in a bubble today or so? I mean, it seems like we can't hear you, Eric. We can't hear you, Adam. We can't. And then Rad, when you came on earlier, you're like, "Can you hear me? Can you hear me?" And the only thing I could hear was the radio in your car. Can you hear me, Rad? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can Rad, but yeah, but can Rad hear you? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Rad, can you hear him or no?
I can hear you, but I can't hear Adam.
Okay, all right. All right. So let's get. Okay, Adam, hold on. Adam, can you hear Rad?
Yes, I can hear.
Okay, Adam, can you hear Dominic?
Yes.
You can hear Dominic. Dominic, ain't said anything. Dominic, are you talking? Say something,
yes,
Dominic.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah,
okay. All right. Rad, can you hear Dominic?
No, I cannot. Can they hear me?
We can. Everybody can hear you just fine.
Yeah,
okay, go out. Okay, go out and come back in. Go out and come back in. We'll see if that.
I will in a bit. I'm driving. I'm alone. I get to my destination.
All right, Adam, go. Sorry.
All right, so let me just repeat. I had full belief in Islam, and I had full belief that as soon as America will leave that country, and it proclaimed for a very long time that it will not stay there forever, and I knew that this is going to come back because this is all pure Islamic. The burqa that you think is oppressing the woman, even the women who are not westernized, do not think that it is an oppression. You need to understand this very basic fact, and the day and the faster you guys will understand this, you will know it that these women don't even call themselves to be oppressed because this is Islamic. This is according to Allah, Quran chapter number 30, verse number 59. It proclaims that you should put a big sheet over yourself, no matter how they translate in the West. The word alayhinna actually says over your own selves, and all the tafsir writer actually explains it when they explain the Arabic. It is the hadudallah, burqa has to be there as soon as there is an Islamic country, an Islamic sharia, an Islamic shara. So if you think that you thought that it will never come, I would say you were living in a la-la land. I'm sorry, but that's...
No, that's quite right. You know, I would have thought. Now, this is just me thinking, of course, because I'm not, I've never been a Muslim, have no desire to be one, don't have any desire to go back to an Islamic-dominant country. But I would have thought that once a society was shown that it can function without all of these 7th century requirements, and that society would be able to see other societies throughout the world that also follow Islam, can operate without having this tent they call a burqa draped over women, I would think that they would say, okay, well, maybe this is something that we should not be doing. It's something that we should at least try to see if there is some type of other interpretation or some other type of meaning in that verse that they find in the Quran. That's what I would think that they would do.
No, brother, that's what you are thinking as an non-Muslim. Show my screen and I will show you clearly.
Okay.
Now, the problem is very simple. You guys are westernized. You guys think that you guys have given them a good life, but that life is not good for them.
That life is going against Islam. Now, work with me over here. It says, O Prophet, tell your wives and your daughters and the women of believers. So it includes everyone. Tell your wives, your daughters, and the women of believers to bring down over themselves of their outer garment. This part is not even in the Arabic. Bring down over themselves. Yudnaina alayhinna. Yudnaina alayhinna. Ayn zab, tam zab. Okay? Part of their garment. This is more suitable for them, and so that they will not be abused. They will not be abused. Yudnaina. It can be translated as abused, harmed, hated, touched, molested. Depending on which translation you will read, all of these words will come up. Now, the word alayhinna means over themselves. So, let's go to the tafheem. Tafheem will actually describe that yudnaina, I just opened this while you were actually talking, so that you would know. Yudnaina alayhinna, how to describe it, check this out. It says, julab is a large sheet. Large sheet. Julab is a large sheet. This is jala bihinna. Okay, jala bihinna. He's saying julab is a large sheet. Okay?
And adana is to draw close and wrap up. But when the word is used with the association particle Allah, like I said, Allah, Ain Zabar, Lam Zabar, Alayhinna. Okay, this is the word if you can see my mouse. Okay, now go back to English. Allah, it gives meaning of letting something down from above. Some modern translator, under the influence of the West, means people like you, have translated this word to wrap up, so as to avoid somehow the command about covering the face. But if Allah had meant what these gentlemen want to constitute, he would have said, yudnaina ilayhinna, not yudnaina alayhinna. So that's the difference between Zair and the Zabar, the Alif versus Ain. Anyone who knows the Arabic knows that yudnaina alayhinna cannot merely mean wrapping up. Moreover, the words min jalabihinna also do not permit of the meaning. It is obvious that anybody who says just wrap up is false. So how do you actually do that? So here, somebody actually did that. So Ubaidah put on his sheet and gave a particular practical demonstration by covering his head and forehead and face and an eye, leaving only other eye uncovered. And Ibn Abbas also had made almost the same commentary. So what makes you think that a Muslima woman, if she is following the Quran, let alone Sunnah, will not do what is written in Quran? Please, mic is yours.
Okay. Well, let's start with the country of Iran, which fancies themselves to be a pretty Islamic compliant country. We don't see the burqa being worn there. Egypt, again.
Their burqa, brother, they are wearing the burqa. They are wearing the burqa. Their faces are covered. Only the eyes are uncovered. So they uncover both of their eyes so that they could see, but their face is covered. So their burqa niqab is another way. But it
what about, okay, all right, head. All right, let's, how about how about Egypt?
I just want to add one thing here, that's okay, it's just a big clarification from my brother here, most people don't know this, he was saying the letters, the harf, and then he said zabar is feta in Arabic, so that, yes, that's what we say in the day future, we call it zabar zerbish, we call the accent mark, so just want to clarify to the audience, like, Arabic speakers, they might not be familiar with that.
Okay, so what I'm trying to get to.
Instead of,
go ahead, Adam. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and plus, instead of Ain, it will be Alif. It will not be from Ain. It will be from Alif. So these are two different alphabets as well, brother. Isa Kabi. So it's the Fatha, the Fatha, and Kasra, and also the letter Ain with Alif. So I can show you both how they are written.
No, what I'm trying to look at is, okay, Dominic, you had something to say? Go ahead, go.
I was just like, if you look at photos of Iran from the 1970s, you see them in like average ordinary dress.
Yes, and that is why there was an inqilab, please translate inqilab, in the Iran, and they went back to Islamic Sharia, and then there was a huge riot and inqilab, what do you call inqilab in English, I don't know, movement or... inside the country, the revolution. There was a revolution, and after that, they moved to the Islamic Sharia.
Okay, well, I don't want to get stuck too hard on the burqa, but I understand the necessity of going there. But what my point is that not every Islamic country that you see that people say that they want to follow the Sharia, they want to follow strict Islamic law, where is this? They don't. You don't see that. The only place that I really saw it was in these pictures that we saw from Afghanistan, where these women are made to wear these tents with only this screen with the eyes, and everything else is completely covered. Now I get it. You know, there are some countries that, you know, you'll find parts of it where women do wear that type of dress, but many of them don't. So the question then becomes, all right, so we know what the Quran says, I appreciate you, you know, pointing that out for us, but what about those other countries? Are they not as Islamic as the Taliban, or are they a bunch of westernized backsliders, or you know, what's your take on that?
Take it out. This is the Google Egypt woman veil. I'm already showing. So no matter how you actually take it, the veil is supposed to cover your face,
mm-hmm.
and one eye or both eye at maximum can be left out. So this is Egyptian veiling. This is not even a veil. So if a woman is doing something like this, Islam, she's doing something wrong. She's literally doing something wrong.
Okay, so she is...
She's the veil.
Okay, is she... Okay, scroll down. What the heck is this? Go back up. What is this woman jogging? Go up. What is that?
That's non-Islamic. That's un-Islamic.
Okay, I would say that ain't it at all.
Number 33, verse number 33. If we go to just 33, third word, it says, and abide in your houses and do not display yourselves as the display of the former times of ignorance. So women are supposed to stay at home until or unless it is a dire need, explicit need to get out of the house.
Sure.
Number 33, verse number 33. And that is what happened when Umar bin al-Khattab was staring at, so you know when Umar bin al-Khattab was staring at Sauda, when the veiling verses was not came down, but after the veiling verses was came down and Sauda was under the veil, Umar bin Khattab actually still stared at Sauda and said, Sauda, I still recognize you. And then Sauda went to Prophet and said, Prophet, this is what Umar said now. So this verse reveals, and unless it is a necessity, and that's when Quran chapter number 33, verse number 33 came down.
It's just amazing. I mean, because here, so here we are. We're going right back to this medieval type ideology. Is essentially what's going on, and that's really not what has me so well. It does have me worked up, of course, because all of these gains that we thought that we might have made in that country are just, you know, it's being pulled right out from underneath them. But what really sickens me is what they're doing to the Christians. What really sickens me is what they're doing is they're going back to these 12-year-old little girls and collect. I mean, it's like it's the war booty all over again. And you would think that a world that supposedly put its blood and treasure into trying to reach these people would be more vocal than allowing these pieces of dirt, literal pieces of dirt, to come crawling back out of these mountains and terrorize these people once again. And this is why I started with what Paul taught, because it doesn't matter what type of a testimony that we have. Nobody cares until we're able to show them the love of Christ. When you compare Paul talking about is what the love of Christ is, and you juxtapose that to what we're seeing today, Afghanistan, if you're not sickened by it, then you've lost your soul. Go ahead, Dominic.
They literally, I mean, Afghanistan, I think we kind of conquered Afghanistan in that, which also, but the thing is, there must be some compliance, even though it's sick, there must be some compliance actually in the actual population, else they wouldn't allow this to happen. Because the thing is, there must be some, because there's no way that they can overtake every single city that quickly if they didn't have some compliance in the actual population. I mean, there's no way, because if that's why they need more the gospel to actually change their kind of thinking, more than the fact of even the small Christians, what they've done to the Christians is terrible, absolutely terrible.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you would have
all compliant. It was fully compliant. Everyone acknowledged and they accepted, except for just a few people in the Kabul or the main city.
Because the majority of Muslim and the majority of Christian, if the majority, if it was more like Iran, where there is a Christian revival, rather than the fact of, say, someone like Afghanistan, do you think they wouldn't allow it to happen?
Do you think there would ever be a Christian revival in Afghanistan, Dominic?
Never.
It's up to God.
Well, I agree 100%. You know, unless, you know, the spirit is absolutely powerful. I mean, it is. But when people, you know, are so blind, spiritually blinded to the truth, how does that spirit ever reach them? And that's, you know, you would have to have something like you know, akin to the day of Pentecost, I would think, where it would just be, you know, God coming in and just forcing it upon you and saying, this is, you know, this is my word, this is who I am. I don't know. It's really hard to sit here and watch, and it's really hard as a former soldier to see all of those things that your brothers and sisters had fought, bled, and died for, just being eroded away at the, you know, just like that, and think that it would happen so quickly. For me, Adam, for me, being a Westerner, it's shocking. It's astonishing to me is what it is. And for, you're from where you are, and, you know, this is, you know, probably predictable. You're like, yeah, I saw that one. Didn't see that one coming, huh? Did you, Kaffer? And you're right. I didn't. Not that quickly.
I wasn't a bit surprised.
Yeah. And what we need, you know, I tell you what we need. We just need to pray for those people. Pray for the strength of will, that the Spirit would move in them to get them up. The ones that helped our military, those are the ones that I'm most frightful for, because if you look at what's happened to our country's credibility now around the world, you know, everybody's going like, you know, look what you did to Afghanistan. You guys ran like a bunch of sissies. I mean, you had the country. We hadn't had a soldier killed in 18 months in Afghanistan. 18, that's a year and a half. And I don't want to say that things were going swimmingly, because if you read some of the articles and you look at some of the videotape, you know, the soldiers and their ability to post, whatever. But it wasn't this terrible mess that people said it was. There was some stability there, but when we shut down Kandahar, Bagram Air Force Base up in Kandahar, and people saw the writing on the wall, and you know, let's face it, you know, when you don't have a leadership come from the top down, and I know I'm getting kind of political here, and I shouldn't be getting political here, but when you have a commander in chief that practically has dementia, and you have woke people running the Pentagon today, this is the type of stuff you get, and if you dislike it's the reality on the ground. You know, I absolutely hate it. Okay, so I think we can stop lamenting that, unless anybody has anything to add. Does anybody have anything, you know, they want to add to that?
You know, it's everything that we've spoken about with Islam is they take the prepubescent little girls, they murder. I mean, the Taliban has only shown us what we've been warning about all these months, and you for years now, and they want this in America? If Sharia law comes into play in America, we're looking at what would happen to America with the Taliban in Afghanistan right now.
Because the thing is, right? In the UK, you've got areas of the UK that are like, was it Sharia law zones? So there's areas of parts of London that you have, is it Sharia police going around the area kind of seeing whether people have got kind of, is there places like that in the States where?
Well, it's funny that you should say that. There was, hold on, because there was the Muslim patrols. Hold on, Muslim patrols. They got themselves in a little bit of tiff though, because they got in a scuffle with some gangbangers. And the gangbangers really, they went over and they beat the tar out of them at the mosque. Let me put it up on the screen. Now, if you look at this car here, hold on, let me make sure I got this going. There we go. Look at this car. It kind of mirrors what the New York City police cruiser looks like, but this is the MCCP, Muslim Community Patrols, is what it is, and they tried to do something like that in New York City, and it turned out that one of the kids said something to a lady going into the mosque, and one of the guys, these tough guys, of course, that run these patrols, came out and got in the scuffle with this kid. Well, it turns out the kid's dad was one of the gangbangers the city or something, so they went down to the mosque, and they were saying, you get that boy out here, because we're going to scuff him up, and the next thing you know, it was the Muslim patrol no longer patrolled. So this is the reality at the end of the deal. Yeah, let's praise the Lord for gangbangers scuffing up Muslim patrols on the street. Yeah, that's sad. Go ahead, Ethan.
Because I've been watching a lot of '80s movies, and culturally in America, we were very open to the Mujahideen being, because I guess the biggest threat at that time for America was, the communist Russians.
The Soviet Union.
Whatever.
Soviet Union.
And what happened was, I was watching Rambo 3, and they have a scene with the Shawar puts on, and they show Living Daylights by James Bond. I don't know if you've seen that movie, 1987, where they go and it's funny. The person who was playing the Mujahideen leader was actually a Pakistani actor named Ard Malik, but he was playing the Mujahideen leader. I think what happened in this crisis is that if America wanted to get involved with this, they needed to be more invested with this and allowing for infrastructure in place. That's if America wants to take that decision. We're going to go and invest in these things. You're going to have to go all the way. You can't just go. You can't pass the bait. You can't. Well, we saw the rush here anymore. No, you got to make sure there's a solid infrastructure. Where I see a lot of activity, military activity, these activities that are against what we would call freedom are coming from the lack of infrastructure. So people are in these power vacuums taking power, like in Iraq. People get mad and say, well, Saddam Hussein was like the worst person ever and he's an evil dictator. Muammar Gaddafi is this horrible evil dictator. But I'm like, well, that's creating stability in this place. If you remove these people from the situation, you create a power vacuum. And when you create a power vacuum, you create chaos. So it's like, it allows for chaos. So why Daesh, Taliban, these groups have risen up, and it's extremely dangerous, I think, for humanity to even have like these kinds of groups that have no, like, there's no centrality. They're just like, okay, well, we're going to follow our interpretation of this book and this religion, and we're going to do whatever. And it's like, once you have, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I'm like, this is extremely dangerous. I think that was the problem. Our President Biden, I think, was like, okay, we're done investing all the money and doing all this kind of stuff. But it's like, yeah, but you can't do that now. When you've invested all the way, you got to go all the way. You can't just pull out and think it's going to work. I'm an anti-imperialist. I say, let's not go to other countries and let's solve our own problems and isolationism. And maybe people think that's a bad position, but that's where I'm at. I'm like, look, we got a lot of problems in our own country. Let's take care of our country. Let's take care of our people. And I think we could do a lot better. I don't think we're really equipped for dealing with these crises in these countries. We don't know their language. We don't know their culture. We can't really deal with these people.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate here with that. You said, let me say something about that. Let me just say something about that. The reason why we went there was because that they were allowing people to plan, plot, train, equip for 9/11 from that country. That's why we went there. Now, once we got there and took that government out, and because the Taliban were in charge at that time, it only took about 2 weeks, for crying out loud. That governmental oversight was gone. That enabled people like Osama bin Laden to reign freely within their borders. But as you said, we're not an imperialist country, or we shouldn't be an imperialist country. But what would you do with something like that? Do you just automatically leave? Well, what fills that vacuum? Well, we found out what fills that vacuum when we went into Iraq, down Iraq, removed Saddam, tried to install a government. That went on for years. When we finally did withdraw, the writing was on the wall. They were not – the military is not led by a government or people capable of – defending themselves against this purely Islamist aggression that goes on in its quest to take over countries. And the same is true with Afghanistan. So you think we would have learned that lesson with ISIS taking over Iraq when we left way too early for that, but nobody wants, you know, nobody had the stomach to sit there and watch, you know, caskets flying back to the United States anymore.
I totally hear you. Do you mind if I respond real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
The thing to me is, I actually hear exactly what you're saying. I think that it's valid. That we're dealing, it's a crisis. We're dealing with a crisis. And it's like, what can you do? What situation can you do? And I'm probably like everyone here, I'm like terrified of an extremist religious regime in any case. Because any country pushing, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they have the power, and they can say, "Well, you know, we can tell what this religion says, and here's the book. I'll show you what the books say. Here are the words, like, you know, what we see here every week. You go to the words and say the words are here, and it justifies everything I'm doing." And that's the thing I think is really dangerous, and why this dialogue needs to happen when people say, "Oh, it's not real religion. It's not real religion." I'm like, when I think people do that, they dismiss the entire case that's going on here. People are religiously justifying what they're doing, and we have to engage that. This is a real problem, and it's terrifying, really. That's why I like how our country, well, here, you know, for the Americans here, I think probably the UK has the same kind of similar. There's probably a similar structure. I'm not completely, you know, adept with the parliamentary commonwealth system, but I know a little bit about Canada because it's part of the same kind of thing, but this idea that we kind of have separation in our faith is personal. That's what we won't go out and say. You can share your faith. You can go out and say, here are tracts, here are whatever, you know, I'm going to proselytize, whatever, if that's what you want to do. As long as you don't hurt people, that's fine. But when you have guns and you start saying, I'm coming in, I'm taking young ladies to be my companions, and you do all this stuff is like...
Young girls, they're not ladies, they're young girls. They're children. They're not young ladies. I wasn't a lady at 12 years old. Okay? So just need to say it right, because it's going to get their heart when we say it right. They're young girls. They're children.
Yeah, what's up with the part with 25-year-old ladies? Were they? I know that they said that you had to, if you had any girls living in your house that were 12 years or older, you had to indicate that you had that. But then there's something about a 25-year-old requirement on it. Does anybody have any idea what that was about? I remember reading that. I can't remember what exactly was said about that. But if you were maybe a widow, I don't know. I can't remember what it was said. But when you're sitting here reading this stuff, and you're thinking, okay, you have people out there that want to say that, okay, Islam is indeed compatible with the United States Constitution. I'm not exactly sure which constitution that they're looking at, and I'm not really sure what type of Islam that they're looking at, because when we were this idea of modesty that Adam had mentioned at the beginning of the show, you know, that they're supposed to cover them in their entire selves. That looking at that, for me, that might not be to you, but for me, something like that might be open for interpretation based on what I see other people other. But when I was reading through the threads that you guys were writing, I mean, you guys were just writing a million things in those Facebook instant messenger threads yesterday, and I was trying to keep up, but evidently somebody tuned into a certain person's show, and that certain person said that they didn't want girls to be able to practice gymnastics or something, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
She was practicing cheerleading. She was probably a 9 or 10-year-old little girl. Their father's out there, you know, in the parking lot, and she's doing her cartwheels and twists and flips and splits and things like that. And our resident imam, you know, wants to claim that it's so perversion, but it's she's practicing her cheerleading with.
But
her
he's daughter. Okay. But what he was okay. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that they would not allow that. They would not allow girls to cheerlead unless they were wearing a burqa. Now I don't. I'm okay. And this is what's so absurd. You know, when people get on there and they say, well, you know, we want to have Sharia is already here in the United States. Well, I'm getting ready to go through a slideshow here that clearly demonstrates that if it is, it shouldn't be in any way, shape, or form. But to say this, you know, and we always see these in these discussions and these threads, oh, we're so disgusted when you go into a church and, you know, these girls are wearing these mini dresses or these mini skirts. Well, I'm not exactly sure which church that they're going into and they're watching all this. And if they are, you know, I'm thinking, you know, why are they? Go ahead.
Are so dishonoring the woman when you allow them to do cheerleading. That's the real thought. Why don't you comprehend what they are thinking? You need
hold on.
Their point of view to destroy them because this is what it is. Because in Quran, show me why did on the calling of Umar, when Umar abused Sauda, wife of Muhammad, instead of Muhammad saying, hey, Quran verse came down, O Muslim men, lower your gazes, Muhammad did not do that. Muhammad sent the verse, Quran chapter number 33, verse number 59, cover yourself from the head to toe. There is a difference. Jesus said, if you look at a woman with lustful eyes, you have already committed adultery. When Umar did that, while standing with his companions, Allah said, women, cover yourself. So how can they allow cheerleading? You understand what I'm saying now?
Right. I get the perspective, sure. I completely understand this perspective because this is supposed to be from an admonition or a directive from God. But we both know that these buffoons were making it up on the fly. The Quran is nothing but a bunch of bunk is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it in a final analysis of forget the anachronism, forget the historical inaccuracies, the scientific laughability of it. But when you look at its application and you try to make a universal application in the 21st century with those things where cover yourself completely, that to me is dehumanizing. You're going to dehumanize that person from having their own personal identity. And we cherish those things here in the West. So this is completely antithetical to what we believe is right and what's wrong in the West. But I completely agree that, you know, they think it's necessary. Why? Well, because Muhammad said it. And we have to believe everything Muhammad said because we know that he was a prophet. Well, how do we know he was a prophet? Because he said he was a prophet. Well, why did he say he was a prophet? Well, because he just said so, and we just have to believe that. Again, it's a bunch of crap. And to have to believe that.
The scary thing I kind of worry for is both Israel and Islamic eschatology, because the fact of the matter is that you've got Afghanistan, but because America left all those weapons and stuff actually in the country, they're not going to stay in one country after the fact of conquering Afghanistan. They're going to try somewhere else. And with the whole view of what they kind of think, what happens in the last days, that's what worries me. Is because, I mean, if we say in England we get 20,000 refugees from Afghanistan who are all kind of Sharia compliant. That's going to affect London as it is. I mean, we've already got like an Islamic mayor. Kind of
what's in the churches, period.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Dio? I didn't catch that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was actually talking on another line.
Oh, well then mute.
Let me mute my phone.
What the heck you're doing, man? And then, hey, DL's talking today. But he's talking to somebody else.
Yeah, I got another pagan.
Oh, boy.
Trying to hit me up. So, okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's right.
Okay. Let me allow me to play some things, and then you can actually comment better on this, because a lot of people are saying we moved our troops out. This video interview was done on March 5th, okay, 5th of March. This was live on 5th of March. And this is when the Biden was having talks with the Taliban.
Okay.
March 9th.
Now that American soldiers have all but left Afghanistan, even though the Taliban maintains close ties to Al-Qaeda, and the country could once again become a breeding ground for international terrorists.
So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
The Taliban, fearing a change in policy, had a clear message to the new U.S. president. Joe Biden has just been elected. Do you think that could potentially change the situation?
د جو بایدن د پاره د موږ مشران را ده چې دا د سم تګلاره خپل لکه او خپل عسکر وباسي د ملک نور د نه ځان خوږوي نه د خپل ملک اقتصاد خرابوي چې هغه بله چاره هم نه لري.
But you're now no longer fighting against American soldiers. You're fighting against people who believe in the same book as you, who are the same religion. You're fighting against your brothers.
نو کوم د شهر مطابق سوالونه چې دا حکومت مینه موږ د دې سم کوم ستونزه نه لرو. امریکانو ته کومه ستونزه چې غوره شوې هغه په دې شکل ده چې دی به موږ غرض نه لري، موږ په دې غرض نه لرو. صرف هغه یوه د وتلو لار هم دوی ته ورکړې ده چې دی په یعنې په امن کې ووځي. دی په لاس جوړ شوی نظام په افغانستان کې اوس چلیږي. موږ خبر هم ورنهم همدا دی وه دای جنگ زیاتوي. نو موږ د جنگ او د جهاد لپاره بالکل آماده یو. موږ په جهاد باندې نه ستړي کېږو، په زخمه باندې نه غمجن کېږو، په شهادت باندې نه دردېږو. موږ که شهیدان شوم کامیاب یو، که په ستړي وم کامیاب یو، که په جنگ کې وم کامیاب یو. موږ به فاتحانه توګه کابل ته انشاءالله ننوځو. دا زموږ لاره او کامیابي ده.
Biden, get out of my country, and it's a threat and a message as well. And Biden did exactly what he said. He took the troops out of the country, and this is way before they took the troops out of the country. We are going to give you safe passage, and you can see even right now American troops have safe passage to get out of the country. Is it a prophecy? No. It happened in the past. Then the troops are getting out. Now the troops still have the safe passage. Mike is all yours, guys.
Yeah, one thing that I was discussing this with the Queen this morning, we were talking about, you know, what happens when we don't get all of our people out. And the bottom line is that we're going to be seeing these people on television for the foreseeable future, begging for somebody to do something to come get them, pay whatever ransoms or whatever. I mean, this is something that's been going on for 14 centuries with Islam. And the way for me, as you know, from a military's perspective, the only way to handle this is to just basically let them know that they're not in charge of this. We are in charge of this. And this is where you get people like the Taliban dictating to a country that has lost, we basically lost the stomach for this. What should be done, in my opinion, is for the next, what's today? Second, for the next 9 days, every C-5A Galaxy that we have, C-17 Starlifter that we have, should be flying from the United States to Kabul with either M1 Abrams tanks on it or Bradley fighting vehicles. And if on the 31st, when they are returning home, we do not have all the Americans out, you go back into the streets. You reassert control and say, look, we're going to get these people out, and you're going to help us. If not, that presidential palace that you guys hold up in right now, it's going down. That's the only language. Correct me if I'm wrong, Adam. That's the only language that these guys understand.
Only understand force, and I have other videos where they are actually proclaiming that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to take the whole.
No, but I mean, if they think that we are weak, they're going to exploit that. And the only way to show them that we aren't weak is say, look, dude, The only reason why we haven't blown you off the freaking map is because we don't want to come in there and own your country. But what we do want is we do want our people back. And those people that did help us, those Afghanis that did assist us, those interpreters and all those people that assist us, whatever ways that they have their phone numbers, they have their bank. They got it from the – watch myself here. They got it from the embassy. They got it from our embassy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Got it from you guys.
Right.
So, and then they actually said they're going to give safe passage to your military troops, not those people, because those people are hypocrites. And the Quran says that destroy all these hypocrites. They are worse than the infidels. So the Muslimin who becomes hypocrites and give side to the infidels, they are worse than the infidels themselves. So they should be punished. They will never let them go. They will kill them. But they are giving safe passage to your military. Get military up or get full invasion in Afghanistan.
You asked me if I would want to do that. Yeah, I would want to do that. You are not. I mean, you are not going to humiliate our country. You're right. You are absolutely right. But you are not going to continue to do this to where our allies across the globe we're going to lose complete confidence in our ability to execute something like this to protect our own citizens. If he allows this to happen. So that you know, you don't even want to think of something like that happening. But you know, it's just so astonishing for somebody like myself to sit and watch this on, you know, all week. Wake up every morning and you're sitting here watching this, and your jaw's just hanging open. It's like, is anybody in charge? You know, is anybody even thinking? You know, more than 3 hours in front of themselves. It's gut wrenching, is what it is. Okay, go ahead, Dominic.
I wanted to dissect this. It wasn't the Sharia later invention. Because you have the Umayyad period, you have the Abbasid period. Wasn't it? Because I know that when Dan Gibson spoke on the Sharia, that he said that it was. Was it 12th century? Or was that like a medieval kind of time period? It wasn't from the 7th century.
Dominic, actually, let me give you the answer for that. Sharia is nothing but a reference of the
punishment of the law taken from Quran and Hadith and Seerah of Muhammad. It's nothing more than that. The thing is, they have compiled the four muhaddiseen of Islam, Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Shafi, Imam Maliki, Imam Hanbali. All four school of thought, Madahib of Islam, the four muhaddiseen of Islam, they actually studied the Quran, the Sunnah, and the Seerah of Muhammad, and they compiled these punishments. Sharia means law, and it's punishment. Fiqh means how to live your life. So there is a book of fiqh, according to all these separate schools of thought. They have books of their own. This is the book how you should live your life. If you do not live your life according to the fiqh, what should be the punishment is described in the Sharia. Sharia by itself is law. Law gives you punishment.
And their authorized punishment. And where does this punishment comes from? They actually, in the Sharia manual, some of the people, I think, have it in her herself, they actually refer with each and every punishment with a hadith, with multiple hadiths, or the Quranic verses, and the tafsir, and they describe how and why it is Islamic. Anybody who proclaims that Sharia we do not follow, they are idiot. Because Sharia is nothing, it's a name which means Islamic law.
Yeah.
So Islamic law. And the manual actually describes how and which hadith and which verse corresponds to this law. So that's the reality.
But it wouldn't be practiced in the Umayyad period. It wasn't.
So at the time of Umar...
Because the hadith were only written in the actual Abbasid period.
Once again, you are talking now about the written. So now, if you forget the written, go by the Islamic logic that when it was not written, it was in the hearts and minds of those people. And Umar and the first generation of Muslimin, like the Sahaba Ikram, means the Umar, Usman, Abu Bakr, Ali and all, they had memorized each and everything. So they were implementing these Sharia punishments in their life. And that is why there are hadiths which refers to what Umar did. What Uthman did, what all of these people did. So these laws are also in the Sharia because they take what Umar and Uthman did at their lifetime because they were doing exactly what Muhammad taught them. When it is written, it's altogether a separate thing. Were these early Sahaba-e-Ikram were following it? Now, yes, exactly. Because the Sharia describes a lot of hadiths references from the Sahaba-e-Ikram. Sorry. In the Sharia manual which goes against the Quran and hadiths.
No, because what I was basically stating was that, because you know that how if you go back to the 7th century, the fact of, stuff like the historical Muhammad and things like that. What was the country? Because the thing is, if you try to, because in these countries they just obey the Sharia. They've got no point to actually obey the Sharia. They have to obey the Sharia. But the thing is, you can't question it whatsoever at all. You have to kind of obey the law. But the thing is, has it got any grounding? I mean, if we're talking about these four Islamic schools, what I'm more talking about is that can you actually ground it in 7th century Islamic history? And could you because that's what I was kind of thinking.
Dominic, you're mixing two things, brother, if I may like to say.
Yeah.
When you talk about a Muslim, he believes that Muhammad was there. He believes that Islam was there. He believes that all of Sahaba was there. These things which are written much later. So that's their belief. So you cannot mix their belief with a question, was it really there? No, that's altogether a different thing. That's a debate. That's a debate. Okay? Now, look at it from the perspective. It's really there. As a person in the United States, if you go and steal, there is a law and there is a punishment. Okay? Depending on the severity of the stealing, there is a punishment and all that. Can you say that, no, I'm not going to follow the law? No. If you're living in that state of America where there is an X type of punishment for something, you will have to go by that punishment and by a law because it was approved by the law and the government. When you talk about Islamic law, it is called Sharia. And whoever says Sharia law is saying la-la. So don't say la-la. It will become a la-la land. So it's Islamic Sharia. It's by itself is Islamic law. When we talk about that, it has to be implemented if that government is run by Islamic people. And anyone who does not fully implement it, he is doing something wrong. In Pakistan, we have partial Sharia. In certain other part of the world, we have partial Sharia. There is Sharia there, but this is partial Sharia. So there are certain laws which are according to the Sharia. There are certain, and Sharia means Islamic law. And there are certain laws which are not according to Sharia. But in an Islamic state, should we have full Sharia implemented? Correct, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you are a good Muslim, you should strive for Sharia, the law of Allah.
That would be hell on earth, wouldn't it? I mean, if they wanted to.
That is,
yeah,
it
that
is hell on earth already.
Yeah, because I know even in London, I think there's like secret Sharia courts that happen. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm getting ready to talk about all that here in just a couple of minutes, guys.
Yeah.
And how antithetical that type of crap is here in the United States anyway. Okay, let me go ahead, if you don't mind, swerving over here to today's topic. We're only an hour and how long into the show? An hour and 2 minutes getting to today's topic. What I wanted to do is I wanted to show today why Sharia is not compatible with the United States Constitution. And anybody that says that they want the Sharia to come to the United States needs to leave. They really do. Because the only way that Sharia would ever be implemented in the United States is not through the democratic process that our Constitution calls for, but through it would have to be done through a coup or through force over the will of the people. That's the bottom line with that. So let's take a look at what the Constitution has to say about this. If you look at the United States Constitution, the Constitution is made up of seven different articles. Article 1 tells us about what the legislature is supposed to be, what it's supposed to do. Article 2 is the executive branch, which is the president. Article 3 is the Supreme Court. And then each additional article up to Article 7, every single one of these articles, the Sharia violates. And I'm just going to give you a couple real quick examples of that. If you look at Article 1, it says that all legislative powers herein shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which will consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives, which is bicameral legislature. Well, the way that it would violate that is that when you look at what Congress does, Congress passes laws on taxes. You have let me take this down here. For some reason, this is not – there we go. The Congress passes laws on taxes. But if you just look at something as simple as a jizya that's passed on nonbelievers, this is completely violated in Section 9 of the Constitution, where it says that no direct taxes will be passed on people based on an individual status, and in this case, the individual status on religion. So just one part of Article 1 of the Constitution is violated by the Sharia and completely incompatible. And I would hope that people that would want to tax people based on their religious preference would be told just to sit down and shut up and sit in a corner. Article 2 of the Constitution governs the executive branch, where the Electoral College elects the national leader. The caliph, according to the Sharia, is unelected. They're not elected by the will of the people. So this is, again, violating Article 2 of the Constitution, is if you're going to vote in a leader, you're not voting in a leader. They are unelected. They are appointed, or assumed anyway. Article 3, which governs the judiciary. Well, when we look at the judiciary, and one of the things about our judiciary is that it practices something called judicial review. Judicial review is where the Supreme Court looks at a law to ensure that it follows the Constitution. And if people don't know the history of this, it's actually not in the Constitution. That's not written in the Constitution. This is just a power that was enumerated in the case of Marbury versus Madison. But when we look at the laws, our laws are reviewed in light of the Constitution. They're not reviewed in light of anything else, only in light of the Constitution, whereas the law, according to the Sharia, is to be viewed in light of the Quran, to see that it's compatible with the Quran. Again, this is the Sharia, and it's not compatible with the United States Constitution, because we view laws and see if they're compatible with the Constitution itself and not the Quran. Article 4 of the Constitution talks about relations amongst the state, interstate trade. They had to do this because the Articles of Confederation sucked. And that's kind of a long story that I'm not going to get off on. But when we look at when you talk about interstate commerce, we're talking about slave trading that went on prior to the Fugitive Slave Act in our country. But correct me if I'm wrong, and you won't, but slavery was never outlawed by the Sharia. And when you look at what the Sunnah of Muhammad teaches, he owned slaves, he purchased slaves, he sold slaves, and he enslaved people. So to say that you can regulate trade in amongst the states based on the difference moral compasses of each state would be completely thrown out just under Article 4 itself also. Let's go to Article 5. Article 5 is pretty simple, the amending of the Constitution. We have a process in which you can amend the Constitution by having two-thirds of the senators and two-thirds of the representatives of the House approve an amendment, and then eventually that amendment would have to be, I think it's three-fourths would have to approve it. Or you can send it out to the states, and this is why this movement in Convention of the States is gaining so much power, is because the states are finally realizing that the federal government's never – it's kind of like the Catholic Church. It's never going to reform itself unless it's made to reform itself. And we don't want to have, you know, like the Protestant Reformation, a bunch of states breaking off from the government because it refuses to reform itself. But this is probably about the only way that it can. But the problem why this can never be compatible with the Sharia can never be compatible with the Constitution is because under the Sharia, well, you can't change the law of God. The Sharia cannot be changed. So there again, Article 5 is incompatible with the Sharia. Let's go to Article 6. Article 6 is, I mean, this is so, there's two things here that just kind of jump out at you. Number one, the supremacy clause that we find in Article 6, where it says that the Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. Well, you talk to anybody that wants to apply the Sharia, everybody's going to say that, no, God's law should be the supreme law of the land. Man's law should be subservient to it. Well, here it's just the opposite. So if you were going to want to implement Sharia into the United States, what are you saying? Well, you want that Sharia, their version of their God's law, to take precedence over man-made law. And the other one deals with having a religious test. Do you think for a second in an Islamic majority country that they would allow minorities to hold that applied the Sharia anyway, minority religious people in minority religions to occupy places of governance or be elected into? And I was kind of think about that before the show. Would there be any place, or are there any countries today that allow that type of where they allow somebody that is a religious minority to occupy a prominent position within the government? You know, when we looked at Saddam Hussein, Tariq Aziz, his Secretary of State, foreign minister, whatever he was a Christian. He was a Chaldean Christian, and he was allowed to. But that wasn't a government that, you know, was run by or, you know, ran or was operating under the principles of the Sharia. I mean, they were just operating under the principles of Saddam Hussein. So you would still not see that. So let's go to Article 7. Now, Article 7 of the Constitution talks about the ratification process. And, you know, I couldn't think of anything there. I'm sorry. I didn't see anything there. So if I want to say that the Sharia is compatible with Article 7 of Constitution, you could make that argument, but then again, you are saying that you are approving the Constitution. It's kind of a stupid thing. Now let's go to the Bill of Rights. This is going to be a lot of fun. Here we go. All right, the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution. Can any? Oh, I'm going to give a test here. Hold on, Dominic, you're exempt because you're a foreigner, but everybody else. But everybody else, let's do this. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you, what are the five fundamental freedoms that we find in the First Amendment of the Constitution?
I know some, but because the Second Amendment is it guns?
The Second Amendment is the right to keep and bear arms, right. But the First Amendment, though, you have five freedoms in the First Amendment. You have freedom of speech, religion, speech. That's the preamble. That's not the Bill of Rights, Connie. That's the preamble.
Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to petition your government.
For redress or grievances. Okay, that's
freedom of property.
No, property's not one. No.
Okay.
No. Hi.
My daughter's for her
birthday. Hi, Chris. Well, tell her we said happy birthday.
Hi. Hey. Thank you very much.
Chris, you came right in the middle of a quiz. We're giving a quiz, but you're a foreigner too, so you wouldn't know the answers to this either. We're talking about the five fundamental freedoms that we find in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, because we're comparing the Constitution to the Sharia. So, Connie, you do a lot more than what most people do, because people go freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and and they just shut down. But you're right. You said speech, religion, and then your government for redress of grievances.
Press
is number four. Very good. That's four.
Assembly.
Yes, exactly right. You get an A. Gold star for Connie. Right. So the easiest way to remember it is RAP. RAPPS. Religion, assembly, press, protest, and speech. But when we look at the Sharia, do they allow all that? Are those fundamental liberties guaranteed to each and every single one of their citizens? Exactly. Right. Okay, for freedom of religion, so do you have freedom of religion in Islam? No.
No.
I mean,
your
question, you must be joking.
No way.
No, you absolutely don't. What did you say, Adam? I didn't hear.
I said if you are asking this question, then you don't know about Islam.
Well, okay. Well, I'm just making sure that people understand you do not have that freedom. Right, you do. You don't even have the freedom to leave that religion, let alone have another religion. Because we talked about that until the cows came home last week, as far as the apostasy.
By the way, today
clause.
Is the apostate day, the first year that we are celebrating.
That's right.
August is the apostate day, FYI. So everyone should congratulate.
Well, congratulations, Adams. We're glad to see that you had the courage to come out of that. John Ives, Steve Mashney, who else was on the show? That Emmanuel Shiad or Shahid. Shahid, Al-Fadi, all you, the AP, we just pray that AP will be found because he's lost. And all those other ones, to think about, have the amount of courage that you have to have in order to leave that draconian mindset is just, that's something else. And I agree. Thank you for bringing that up, Adam. Thank you. All right. So freedom of religion. So that's kind of a no-brainer. What about freedom of speech? No.
We have the blasphemy.
Sure, right. Okay, so, we would say, Charlie Hebdo much? No, of course not. You don't have freedom of speech there. And it actually says right here in Reliance of the Traveler, to revile its apostasy. It was we had it up on the screen last week.
To revile Muhammad and...
To revile Allah or his message, not and. I mean, because there you would have to do both of it in order to be found guilty. So either or is apostasy. So no freedom of speech. All right. Well, how about freedom of the press? Well, then again, we get into those Charlie Hebdo cartoons, and then also what we saw, what our pals did out at Global Patriot Radio out there in Garland, Texas, with the Draw the Muhammad contest with Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer when they went out there and held that contest in the very building where they had that Protect the Prophet or Protect the Prophet's Honor thing right after Charlie Hebdo. So, no, you don't have that. What about freedom of assembly? Do we have the ability to – yeah. Because I would like to have a church service in Saudi Arabia. Do you think that's going to happen? No, and we see it on full display today with the Taliban in Afghanistan shutting that down.
Do they actually have an Arabic word for freedom?
Say that one more time.
Do they actually have an Arabic word for freedom?
I don't know. Is there a word for freedom in Arabic?
Is there an Arabic word for freedom?
Maybe he's away from the mic. Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't. Okay, let's go to the last one. Okay, Friday petition protest. Okay, so can you protest against a mosque? Have you seen anybody standing outside a mosque protesting? Somebody outside the Kaaba holding up signs? We want.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can protest as long as you don't want to keep your head on your shoulders.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, you've lost your head protesting against
protest.
It. Yeah, that's just, yeah. So just looking at the First Amendment to the Constitution, we find that it would, the Sharia is completely incompatible. These are the most, when people talk about the Constitution and they talk about our rights as citizens, these are the most cherished rights. Speech is the most cherished right of of an American is to say that I have freedom of speech. I can say what I want to, unless you're a school teacher, of course, and then you just have to keep your mouth shut and you can't say anything. All right, let's go to the Second Amendment. Now, this is probably my favorite amendment to the Constitution, of course, which would be the right to keep and bear arms. But when we look at the Pact of Umar, and we're going to try to get that in it towards the end of the show, the Pact of Umar says that the kuffar, somebody that is a dhimmi, somebody that is a non-Muslim, cannot carry a sword. And that application would be as equitably applied today in carrying a gun. So a cherished fundamental right of every American citizen is to keep and bear arms, unless, of course, you're a wife beater, then you can't purchase firearms. And then the Third Amendment, quartering troops. This was a result of where they said the colonists were like, we're never going to allow this humiliation to ever happen again, because the British forced the colonists to quarter troops, to house troops in their homes in order to keep them from crossing the Appalachians and claiming that land that they had won, they thought they had won in the French and Indian War. So this idea of quartering troops is an anathema to our country. But when you look at what the Pact of Umar calls for, a Christian has to lodge a Muslim for at least 3 days in their homes if they are if they're passing by. Let's go to the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure. Again, here's where Muslims can go into any church at any time that they want to, unannounced, and look for people who they think that the church might be hiding from them, providing quarter, too. So the Fourth Amendment would not approve or apply just in this one aspect. Fifth Amendment, the rights of accused. When we look at the rights of the accused here in our country, everybody has the same equal fundamental rights. And under the Sharia, non-believers do not have the same rights of the accused as believers do. And that, what I mean by that, as far as the testimony of those, because if I'm not mistaken, under the Sharia, non-Muslims are not allowed to testify against Muslims. I'm willing to be wrong on that, but I'm fairly certain I'm correct. And then also, if you look at the women's testimony, is that supposed to be half of that of a man? Good luck with that one in our court system today. And our Fifth Amendment clearly prohibits that. Sixth Amendment, this is the right to a speedy trial. And when we look at, I did not put this up there. I'm sorry, guys. I took that off there. Quit talking about that. This is the right to a speedy trial, where if you're not
absolutely Islamic, you will have speedy trial on the same day at the same time.
Okay. Seventh Amendment.
Yeah, it's more speedier than anything. Like, you can say something about Muhammad, within seconds you've got your judgment.
Judge, jury, and everything. Everything on the point.
Okay. Let's go to the Seventh Amendment. Let's go here to civil trials. And this is where I'm thinking that if a church is burned by, let's say, a bunch of, and this is where I was kind of hoping John would be here today, because he talks about this all the time, but what happens to churches in Egypt. What are the rights of those people to sue for damages against those mobs that burn their churches? They're not existent. So when we talk about civil trials, if a church or a Christian is injured in something like this, there is no redress for them to go through. And the Eighth Amendment, of course, is cruel and unusual punishments. Now, if you think of what the Sharia calls for, yeah, thank you, Chris, for that added background there, because that is a joke. You're absolutely right. And when you think of people getting their hands and feet cut off for, stealing, the crucifixion of people for causing corruption to land, the stoning of adulterers.
Please, can I chime in on this one too?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
And then you have the LGBTQ MNNOP people that are saying that Islam is so wonderful, yet those same LGBTQ MNNOP people would be getting thrown off the rooftop right now in Afghanistan.
Right. Yeah. And they probably are.
Yeah, let's
try. CNN's not going to tell us that.
You know, this is one thing that I do struggle with is, we say, well, we must extend, careful on how I say this, because I don't want it to come out the wrong way. I believe God ultimately is the judge over us. God judges us, not man. And so when we look at something that I completely think is a violation of man's pride, throwing it in God's face, I think of homosexuality. I think it's one of the most abhorrent sins that somebody not necessarily commit, but celebrate, saying, this is who I, this is what I do. And to throw that in God's face, we all sin. We have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We know this. But when we sin, we're to be repentant of that sin, to show some humility to God. But when you turn around and you celebrate this, like, I don't know, in Pride Month, really, this is something that is just completely out of line for me. But to punish them by in any way, shape, or form committing those sins, that is between them and God. Jesus Christ is going to judge all of mankind. And for people who make a mockery of God's word, there's going to be a price for it. But that's not for me to decide, and that's only for God to decide. So when we see people being thrown off of tall buildings or adulterous stoned, or thieves having their hands and feet cut off, to me that is just absolutely disgusting. And what's the excuse? Well, you know, we need to punish them here in the after, because in the afterlife you don't want them punished in the afterlife. That's a bunch of BS, is what. I mean, that's a bunch of crap, is what it is.
You know, and Jesus says, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. See how he takes it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Not if somebody else, then you cut his arm off.
Absolutely.
If
yeah.
Your eye, if your hand.
It's your
you do it.
It's your soul. You're exactly right. It's yes, completely sir. On you. Not somebody else.
You look at you. Boy, I'm echoing here.
And you know what disgusts me is this idea of what is and is not modest. When we start talking about the, you know, as far as, you know, punishments for women. I mean, when we this is something that I was thinking about the other, but when you guys were writing those things after watching the Imam show about his comments about modesty, and I honestly believe he would be one of those people who were would be the type of person that was in Afghanistan back in what it was, mid-90s or whatever, all those girls were in that school. And it caught on fire, and they fled, and they were made to go back into that school because they didn't have their burqas on or their hijabs on or whatever it was. And you're just absolutely disgusted by that type of mindset. Oh, or you're going to offend me because I'm going to see your hair, or I'm going to see, you know, you're not completely covered. Making those school gear.
Jeez.
You're right. You're exactly, yeah. If you want to talk about what Islamophobia is, that's Islamophobia right there.
Yes, it is.
But I, you know what? I think I, you know, Connie, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your meme from where it says you might be an Islamophobe if.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
and well, you changed it to Islamist. Is that did that or did that down from someplace?
No, I did that.
Okay, you might be an Islamist if uh-huh. You might be an Islamist if you would send a bunch of girls. Yeah, you might send a bunch of girls back into a burning building because they're not conforming to the modesty.
God, you might be an Islamist if your last name's Bomer.
that's the type that I would be.
You might be a Thomas if your best friend's a crackhead named Marshall Gregg.
Stop.
You might be an Islamist.
I know it's coming.
Friend is a disgraced ex-cop, looks pedophile on his profile, Charles Doyle.
Okay. All right. Well, Chris, I'm glad you called that all out. Hey, did you see? Was that going on in our chat this morning where Charles has become a Shia? Is that true?
I try not to pay attention to the Three Stooges, but it possibly could be. Charles has no idea what he is. He's a Sunni when he's with his imam from Texas until they fight, right? And then once they argue, he becomes agnostic And then they become friends again, and they become Sunni. So, yeah, he's probably Shia now. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. That's what I heard. And he was following some teachings of some dude down in Australia or something. I can't keep up with all. I try not. What's that?
Tahiti, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, that might have been who it was. Yeah,
Tahiti.
That makes sense. Okay, so let's go back to this Eighth Amendment thing. Because the Eighth Amendment clearly outlines, you know, the punishment, the cruel and unusual punishments. The definition of what cruel and unusual is varies depending on the culture. But if you ask anybody, you know, is, you know, cutting somebody's hand off cruel and unusual? I think 99.999 people or percent of people are going to say, yeah, that's cruel.
Amendments, by the way, like what do you mean by amendment? Like, what is an amendment? Amendment means change. So these are changes added into American law.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate that. The Constitution was written in 1787, and one of the arguments during the Constitutional Convention was that, well, we don't have a Bill of Rights like the English have their English Bill of Rights. And the people at the Constitutional Convention, you keep in mind, these are a bunch of old men. They're sitting in a hot building in Philadelphia, and they all begin to smell pretty bad. And they want to get out of there. And they said, look, once this Constitution is ratified by the states, we will add a Bill of Rights, which means that they will add changes to the Constitution that include a Bill of Rights, and they will do that immediately. So for some strange reason, when the Constitution was ratified and Washington was elected in 1788 and that first Congress met, they actually did what they said they were going to do. They drafted the Bill of Rights, which are the first 10 changes to the United States. The amendment is a change, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. So when we talk about the First Amendment, this is the first change. They're saying that everybody is guaranteed this fundamental right. It's that the First Amendment says the Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, nor of free speech, nor of the press, nor the rights of the people to peaceably assemble or petition the government redress of grievances. And people look...
Before the First Amendment, the American law does not provide the freedom of religion?
Correct. It did not guarantee it. You're right. You're absolutely right. And here's what the argument was. The argument was that the laws of the states would take precedent over that, and they would allow people the freedom of religion. That was the argument. That was argued. Actually, that was when you look at the Federalist Papers, when they start making these arguments for the ratification of the Constitution, and when you start looking at the assemblies when they did meet to ratify it, that was one of the Constitution was, is that we already have this freedom of religion. We don't need that written into the federal constitution, but they did it anyway because they wanted to make sure that every state that after that had that guarantee.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so American law has been, nation.
So American law was being changed slowly and gradually from
not,
the
not
first.
Changed,
no.
Amended. Not changed.
Well,
amendment means change.
Actually. Well, okay. Well, that's a fair assessment, Adam. You know, we changed our Constitution almost immediately. That's absolutely right. But when you look at how many amendments have actually been passed to change our Constitution, those first 10 amendments were passed. Actually, the first 10 amendments were passed by 1791 is when within 3 years of our Constitution being in effect. So these first 10 amendments went into effect immediately. We've only had 27 amendments to our Constitution. So that leaves 17. Of those 17 amendments, the two additional ones went to fix, or the 11th and 12th went to fix the way that we elected a president, because that was all jacked up according to the original Constitution, and they fixed that. Then you look at the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments. These are the Reconstruction amendments. These were passed right after the Civil War. And what they did was they abolished slavery. They extended the civil rights to the newly freed slave, and then the 15th Amendment gave the newly freed slaves the right to vote. So now you're down to 14 amendments. Well, when you look at those 14 amendments, of those 14 amendments, two of them, one of them was purely Islamic, and that was the prohibition of alcohol And everybody's like, woohoo, I bet the Muslims would have loved that one. But then we passed in another amendment, canceling that amendment. So now you're actually down to 12 amendments, and the majority of those deal with voting ages and who can vote. And I'm getting ready to go through them if you just hang on, because I address several of them. I don't address all of them because, you know, like the 27th Amendment or the 25th Amendment that addresses, you know, you have a president who's lost his flipping mind or has dementia or his name's Joe Biden. Okay, let's go to the 9th Amendment. We'll get to those. This is, okay, 9th Amendment is, it states that any rights that are not spelled out in the Constitution belong to the people. And what that means is that even though the Constitution doesn't say we have the right to breathe, do we have the right to breathe? Absolutely. So, and this is just the easiest way to describe it. If the Constitution does not say that we have the right to own property, does the Constitution guarantee us the right to own property? No, it does not. Do any other of the rights or any of the amendments in the Bill of Rights guarantee that? No. So what it is saying here is that just because the Constitution doesn't specifically guarantee us a right, though that right remains with the individual. And then the same thing applies to the 10th Amendment. The 10th Amendment says that those powers that are not enumerated in the Constitution, for example, like, I don't know, let's take the Department of Education. The federal government has no right to regulate what goes on in the state's educational program. But yet, there again, but the bottom line here is that if the Constitution does not say that the federal government has a specific power, that power belongs to the state. And I use the education one as that example because the Constitution does not say that the federal government has the right to set up a federal education system. So that does not say that right belongs to state. So that's the 10th Amendment. Then we get into these other amendments. Let's talk about the Reconstruction Amendments, abolition of slavery. When we look at slavery, slavery was never prohibited by Islam and is still practiced in some countries like Libya, to an extent in Saudi Arabia and other countries. The guarantee of civil rights. There is no guarantee of civil rights for people and people that are not Muslim in Muslim majority countries. And I'm fairly certain anybody that's lived in Muslim majority countries would say that to say that you have civil rights there is an absolute joke. And to try to bring that to the United States would be unthinkable. And then the right to vote. Democracy does not belong in Islam, does not exist in Islam. And we just saw how evident that was with what just happened with the Taliban. And Adam did a great job at the beginning of the show describing how that is so antithetical to the Sharia and Islamic belief systems. And then you have other amendments. The 18th Amendment, oh, that's it. Okay, prohibition. That's where I said Muslims would probably like that one. That's about the only one that would have been following the Sharia's, where you can't drink alcohol. You can't, well, not drink alcohol. You can't say that, said that you could not produce or sell or traffic alcohol. I believe how it was written. I'm willing to be wrong on that. But this is exactly what we find in many of the Sharia compliant countries. But when we tried that, that didn't work out. And then you have the 19th Amendment. This is where women are given the right to vote. We find in many of the, again, Muslim-majority countries where women are not given the right to vote. 22nd Amendment limits the number of terms a president can serve. We had FDR was elected in 1932, and he served all the way up to 1945. He only served, I think it was 2 months, 3 months into his fourth term. He was elected four times, and he essentially changed the entire judicial system because he was the one that was appointing judges. The Constitution provides the president the power to appoint judges, federal judges, and he had been doing it for, up to this point, 13 years, and he had changed almost the entire judiciary with his mindset, and people saw, that's a very dangerous thing to do. So they changed it to where a president can only serve up to 10 years or two terms. Then we have, what, the 24th Amendment. This is the abolition of poll taxes. And again, in a lot of countries, you have to be a male. You have to be able to recite the Shahada. And that is antithetical to the American system of voting rights. Voting rights are extended to all people. And then I could go into constitutional principles, and I'm not going to bore you with that. So I think I'm just going to leave it there and leave it open for discussion.
Every American constitutional law against Sharia.
Yeah, you could make that argument. I wouldn't say all of, like I said, the 18th Amendment to the Constitution, the Sharia, that's completely consistent with Sharia because it bans alcohol. But after what happened with Al Capone and all his cronies in Chicago, and we saw people trafficking, smuggling, and the gangs that were, out of that, and you saw the corruption that went on in police departments and in the city governments. People said, "Look, let's stoop. People are drinking." My grandfather was talking about how he used to sell liquor. He said, "Hey, you want something to drink? Go see that guy in the, well, he wore a red shirt at, one of the clubs that he would go to, and he would take him out to the car and sell him a pint of whatever during this time period." So it's just crazy how our country did something like that. Yeah, there you go, Volstead Act. Thank you, XYZ. We appreciate that. Okay, so do we need to have Sharia in the United States, according to the Constitution? Would anybody here say that would be a good thing?
Absolutely.
You would think it would be a good thing?
It's treasonous to America. It's a treason.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we need to read anywhere in the world.
Just like we wouldn't bring Buddhism as our government. Yeah. We already have a government.
Yeah, but I would think that... Go ahead, Issa.
Certain countries, they do this thing called family law, where people of a certain, who are Muslim, like, I think in the UK they do this, right, Dominique, where people have their, like, Sharia court, but it's not really, like, it's, like, maybe in conjunction, sort of, with the British court, where they kind of, do, like, their family disputes, like, with marriage and divorce. I don't know. I don't think that's problematic, but the idea, the Hajj, totally.
But even me, I would find that dodgy. I mean, if they're having court, then it have them in the public.
No, the problem with this is that if you have family courts over here, according to Sharia, then you also have to allow polygamy, which is not allowed in
great point.
In different states. So if you have family Sharia courts, then polygamy has to be allowed because Islam allows four marriages. Do you want to allow polygamy?
But they still have polygamy here.
Say that again, Issa.
You can have multiple girlfriends. Oh, sorry. I think Adam would agree with this point, too. They have multiple girlfriends, and then they call them wives. Like, they go to the Islamic place, they get the contract, and they say, because I know a lot of people, particularly where I'm from, they do it. And the people who do it are actually people who are on welfare. I don't know if everyone knows what welfare is here, but basically it's like government subsistence. The people who do polygamy here that I've noticed are people who are on welfare, and then they get their wives to be on welfare, and it's like, but the thing is they're not legally married, like by city call, but they're Islamically married, and basically how they legally do it is you can have as many girlfriends as you want as a guy. Like, you can legally have 100 girlfriends, and there's nothing legally about it.
Issa, the problem over here is, they do it as a girlfriend, but by the law of the insurance and everything, it does not fall under that. So they will have to only allow one spouse, whether they call it a girlfriend or whatever, one spouse to be the legal partner. By law, it is still one spouse. If they are having multiple girls and performing sex with them, this is the freedom of your action that is allowed in the United States. So that is the law.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that, Adam, because I just made this note. It's who is recognized by the courts, and that would be just one wife. Now, if you were to say that you have two wives, no court is going to recognize that second wife as having any type of standing in the court for any type of reason, for any type of process.
What a lot of people do is they don't even get, they don't go to City Hall for any of them. They just get married to these women in the Islamic means, and they're just all girlfriends. So in reality, they would have, in, I guess here, the standard would be that they're just a girlfriend, which means they don't have legal rights. You're right, Adam, that's true. They're not.
And they should not have any legal, they shouldn't have any legal rights or any type of legal standing, because like I said, when you look at Article 6 of the Constitution, where it says in Section 2, it says that the Constitution will be the supreme law of the land. The Constitution is based on laws that are passed by the legislative branch, approved by the president, and are in effect in the country. And if you try to incorporate any type of law that tries to subvert that process, then that is extra constitutional, and therefore you can't supersede the Constitution that way. Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you.
I was thinking about the Mormons, because the Mormons had to move out of, I don't know which state it was, to Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the whole polygamy rule,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it underneath that? That was the U.S. constitutional thing.
The Constitution and the United States has finally caught up to the Mormon Church, because the Mormon Church operated almost unimpeded for almost a century when they first migrated out there, because they got chased out of every state that they had been in, and this is why they set up shop out in Utah, because nobody at that time in the mid 1850s was in Utah. They were the only ones there. So when they lived in Utah, they started passing their own laws, their own ordinances, and they were obeying their own this marriage thing where they could practice polygamy. Until just recently, within the last 20 years, the laws have finally caught up to the Mormons in Utah and said, no, you cannot do that. And if you do, we're going to prosecute you to the full extent of the law and send you to jail. And it was just within the last decade, maybe two decades, where they finally started clamping down on that. But then again, they start doing the same thing that Muslims are doing when they start practicing polygamy, is they say, well, we're just spiritually married. We're just married in the church. And the government, according to the First Amendment, has no business sticking its nose into what the church does. Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah. It's an interesting question, though. I am curious, though, with polygamy. If it is not legalized, just, you know, being –
it's coming. Based on where the court is going, based on where the courts are going, Issa, that's the next shoe to fall.
So my question would be, is this a bad thing? Because the thing I'm really worried about is the women. So polygamy, if you don't legalize it, the women actually suffer more, because the guy could just, you're just my girlfriend. I don't have to give you anything. I don't have to do anything for you, and I can just abandon you. And I'm just like, that is the thing I'm concerned about. You know, in reality, because some people are like, oh, well, this is a religious right. This just seems to be the right thing to do. And then if they don't have a legal standing, they go to court. The guy says, I was never married to you legally, so I can just get away with whatever I want.
This is where we have common law. Go ahead.
Yes, and this is where the problem. This is where the right of the woman comes up, because if they hide it from the first wife, then she can leave. And then she can actually take half of his property and all, because now this guy is involved in extramarital relationships. So your first wife, and a lot of Muslims, you know that, do it by hiding. And in Pakistan and any other Muslim country, she has no right in this respect, because it is allowed, because he is legally married. Now here, even if he is not legally married and having a girlfriend or legally married, first wife has the right to leave that person with all the property and everything. So I think this empowers the wife, especially the first wife. Does that make sense?
When you start looking at, you know, the rights of somebody that has been injured in all of this, you know, if you're just a girlfriend, you know, number one, the guy is going to get taken down. If I'm that first wife, homie's going to be paying me some money. I'm taking everything. You know, I'm going to take everything. What's that one song? I'm going to the Big D and don't mean Dallas. I got the keys and she got the palace. I mean, that's exactly what needs to happen if somebody is operating like that way. And I think any impartial judge looking at that would rule that way. However, to grant property rights, inheritance rights to a woman that is spiritually married to somebody is outside of the courts. You cannot do that. You cannot unless you can show damages, of course. You know, you have to have, you know, some type of personal injury or some type of personal injury has to be demonstrated there. But when you start talking about does the United States have to recognize women's rights who are under the marital laws, then no, they don't have to, because again, the Constitution, according to the sixth article, will be the supreme law of the land. Mark Chestnut. Yeah, I'm going through the Big D. Thank you. That was the song that I was trying to sing.
Would you like to read a paragraph for me? This is the Book of Fiqh, Hadayah,
mm-hmm.
volume number 2, and this is the section about sale and purchase. Would you be so
kind? Sure. Okay. So if a per fun, what is this?
No, that's a person, S, read SS, unless there is a dash in the middle.
Okay, this must be something outside of... Anyway, okay, so if a person purchased a slave from one who had usurped him, and the slave be maimed by any person wilt in the possession of the purchaser, and he, purchaser, exact the fine of trespass, is that what it said, trespass from the maimer and the original proprietor, then give his assent to the sale, and in this case, the fine is the property of the purchaser, because the slave is in such case considered as the property of the purchaser from the period of the purchase, whence it is evident that he was so at the time of the maiming, and this is an argument against the doctrine of Muhammad exhibited in the preceding case, since as the fine is in this instance the right of the purchaser solely in the virtue of the establishment of property in him from the period of
the purchase.
Okay. Now I thought, okay, now you know what? This is actually something that, you know, a teacher could use to teach people to recognize certain... That's a great thing there.
Now read what does that mean? Can you please read the asterisk?
The where? It says, by dismemberment of a limb such as the hand.
Okay, now this is maimed. Okay, this is asterisk, and we are talking about
maimed. Right.
Purchase a slave, then you do this with the slave, and they said such a hand. But at that time, it is not the hand. You know what it is that they are cutting of the slave, the thing between the
mm-hmm.
legs.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right, so, I get it.
So basically, this is what it is talking about, and there is like 8 more pages. I don't want you to read all of them, but I will give you the PDF. This is Hadayah, Book of Hadayah, volume number 2, which talks about the purchase and sale and purchase of property. And within that sales and purchase of property, you have 6 pages about sales and purchase of slaves under the property. So when we talk about the Islamic Shara and Islamic Fiqh, and this is the Book of Fiqh, which our Ibn Fubn Farooq was referring to when he was talking with our brother David Wood. And he was referring to this book. And this is the book that I showed, and I showed him that. So now, the problem is this the Sharia? Yes, because Ibn Fubn said, we don't take the law from Ibn Kathir, we take the law from the Fiqh and Sharia. That was his statement. And these are the books to what you are showing as our rights in America versus what is written here in just one paragraph. I haven't asked you to read like all 6 pages.
Well, it violates the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, because what it does is it's justifying slavery. Or it's just saying that practice. Well, yeah, the Eighth Amendment. Yeah, so it violates the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, and it violates the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. It would also violate, to an extent, well, of course, the 14th Amendment also. So, yeah, this would be completely unacceptable in any court of law in the United States because of those amendments.
That's what Islamic is, and that's what they have in Afghanistan. It's coming. It's there.
Yeah, and that's you know, that, for me, it's just, I just cannot understand. And if your religion teaches you to repress other people and subjugate other people, I would hope that there would be some type of alarm bells going off in the back of your head saying something just isn't right here. So when you can walk, you know, when you can basically take little girls as war booty and give them to your fighters like they did, if you can take somebody that does not have your same religious beliefs and just take them out and kill them without a trial because they are Christian, I would hope that your humanity would kick in. But when it's so ingrained in you, as, you know, Adam has talked about, you know,
when they use the name of God, oh, God gave this Quran, so it, you know, naturally the people want to, you know, submit, wow, this is from God. But then if you think about it, what it says, it isn't from God at all. And in America, we're not going to start cutting off men's penises as they did, yada, yada, yada. You know, this Sharia is not compliable for the Constitution. It's for a moral and religious people, and no other government can come into it.
Well, this is exactly why I mentioned that you would have hoped that the people in Afghanistan would have had enough exposure to see that, not necessarily that, you know, the version of Islam that the Taliban presented was bad or evil, but at least they would have been able to see that, not in Christian countries, but at least in other Muslim majority countries, they would at least be able to be exposed to a different version of Islam that isn't so draconian. And I know, you know, when you start thinking about, well, which Islamic country is that? Well, you know, if you just take the country of Indonesia, for an example, you know, they have some things that, you know, in that country that I believe are truly draconian. They do repress the rights of Christians, but they're not going out and killing them in the streets for simply being a Christian. They're not forcing women to live in tents and call it a burqa and telling them that, well, this is according to the Islamic law. And I would think that they would have at least had the ability to see that there is a different version of this that could be applied, and not this strict version that's going to be imposed upon them by the Taliban. I would have thought that at least something like that would have taken. But again, fear is a beast, and if you are completely, you know, afraid, if you're afraid that you're going to be the next one, be taken out and shot in the square. Mm-hmm. You're just going to sit there and keep your mouth shut and put the tent on, and live and survive. I don't know.
Connie is talking over here with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 non-mahram people right now. I want to show if she was in Afghanistan, what would
happen? Would she be made to go to the corner and sit down and shut up?
No, check this out. What should be the punishment?
All right. Okay, hold on. Issa, hold on. We'll let you go. Let Adam play this, and then Issa will let you go.
Okay, I just wanted to explain.
Is Issa going to explain, or should I play? Sorry.
I don't know. Issa, what do you got?
I'll wait.
You'll wait? Okay.
I can wait till you show the video. Either way, what is better?
Well, I don't know. What are you going to say?
I'll explain quickly.
Okay.
So a mahram person is someone like, so it's like it's your legal relative. So if you're with someone who's like a non-legal relative, this is like the situation. Like if a man is with like his sister or something like that, that's okay. Like you're not going to have any relations with that person. But, like, if someone's, like, a cousin, even if someone's, like, a cousin, like, you can technically, legally marry your cousin. So, and some people do practice. So, that's what he means. Like, he's saying, we're, all of us, can have, we, according to some, we are not too close enough not to have relations in that department. You know what I mean? Physical, sexual relations. So, that's what a mahram is. It's, like, people you can't have relations. You know, the people, there are people you can have relations with and people you can't have relations with.
And the relation, so, mahram is your father, your brother, and,
yes,
your, so yeah, this is like, your husband and all that, and your son. So it's like there you can unveil yourself. So now let's play the video.
Okay, here we go. There we go. All right, go
ahead. And he had a ghira. And he had this sense that this is wrong. And this is the people of ghira. And the people that don't have ghira, and they don't care who rules over them. They just want to make their money. They just want to submit and be safe and, you know, be safe, quote unquote. And they don't care. But the people of ghira, they don't allow it. And amongst the Muslims as well, when you see the kafir enter the land, the people of ghira, they will not stand for it. And they will continue to strive and struggle until they're free.
Take pride in their supposedly egalitarian society, but women remain the first victims of their cruelty. Shortly before we arrived in the countryside of Herat, where we filmed part of this report, a young woman was publicly flogged by a Taliban judge.
Alright, I just removed it. So, publicly flogged, and for what reason? For the reason that she was talking to a person on phone. Number on phone.
Again, it's draconian. For anybody... Sorry. Where's my unmute? There we go. Thank you. Yeah, again, I'll say it again. Anybody that would say that they want this type of law, or any, let's just put it this way, any part of the Sharia to come to the United States needs to leave. And here's why. Because once you allow... Let's see, Adam. Adam's unmuted. Who else is unmuted? Adam, can you mute real quick? Is that better? Oh my, it's 4 o'clock.
Sir.
Okay, let me just say this, and then we'll get to some closing comments. But what I was going to say, and the reason why that I'm so emphatic about not having any part of the Sharia being allowed to be applied in the United States. Unless, and here's the only stipulation, unless those parts of that law deal with their religious practice. I don't want to hear any yipping and yammering about marriage laws. I don't want to hear any yipping and yammering about laws or any of the like, because those laws are covered in the United States Constitution. But if you want to talk about, you know, washing your hands, washing your face, you know, blowing water through your nose and your the contact, I don't care. But those parts of the Sharia that affect other people, I don't want any part of that. I won't allow that here in the United States. And I would speak out as strongly as anybody possibly can against that. And the reason why is that once you allow one of those laws in, it's called mission creep. We saw this, you see this in the military. The mission is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you allow one, then you allow two, then you allow three, and the next thing you know, they're trying to practice all of those laws. And Dominic can tell us how that's been affected, how that affects everybody in the UK. Also, DL, did you...
Give them an inch, they'll try to take a mile.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, DL unmuted himself for some reason. I don't know if he meant to do that. I don't know if I have... Do I have the ability to mute people?
Yeah, you
do. Yeah, I do. Okay, look at there. I did. Okay, does anybody have any last passing thoughts? Adam, go ahead.
Hear what DL wants to say. You muted him again. He was quiet the whole time.
I don't know if he meant to unmute himself. He can unmute himself if he wants to. Come on. DL, did you have anything to add? I'll unmute him. DL, did you have anything to add?
That
video was pretty disgusting, man, hitting that woman like that.
No, well, that's the brutality that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I remember when the ISIS initially rolled up into Iraq, and those videos out on how they were just they were traveling down the highway, and they would pull up next to a car and just open fire with AK-47s into that car, and then chase whoever survived in that car down, and they filmed the whole thing, and execute them right on the spot. And that reminds me of that type of brutality, of that indiscriminate enforcement of a law without what we cherish here in the West, the due process. And I wonder how much due process they gave that girl in America that they sat there and beat. I would probably venture to say none.
They got her talking to a guy on phone. It was so brutal, and I didn't want it to show the whole video, as you can hear what they're saying. But yeah, that's the reality of the situation, whether you can't run away from this.
Yeah.
That scene
is kind of reminiscent of John chapter 8. The woman
Can
you imagine Jesus being there?
Oh, and if she was a married woman, then she should have been killed. So,
oh yeah,
she was unmarried. That's why the blogging.
Yeah, they would have taken her out, buried her halfway up to her waist, tied her arms behind her back, and you know, the sick thing is that all those videos that we saw or that were on YouTube of where the Taliban was doing that to women, they'll be back. It's just gonna.
No, it is recent, brother. It happened on the 13 or 14.
No. I understand that, but I'm saying the ones where women are gonna, the stoning of women, those will be back.
And who can say that it's already not happening?
You're absolutely right.
If you had asked a question about do we have any personal thoughts, any concern, like, one thing that comes to me is just, it's kind of horrific. As DL was saying, as everyone in this panel is saying, it's like, if your religion, any religion, is taking the rights of another person's rights away, it can't be allowed. Like, I always bring this up, and I'm sure Adam knows about this, was a practice called Sati in Bengal. And it was a practice where a man died, a woman was thrown into the fire with the man. And some people said, oh, they chose to have that. Some said they loved that. I was like, no woman loved that. That's just a lie. You know that it's a lie. And a missionary named and they Hindu, like, basically fought against this. And it got banned in South Asia. It got banned, you know, in Nepal, in India, you know, in South Asia. This was an evil, diabolical practice. These things are evil, diabolical practices, where you stone people and you murder innocent people because you something you don't like. I'm sorry. That's why we have to have freedom. And your relationship with your God, with your Lord, that's a private thing. That's what I call the West, United States, wherever. That must be maintained. We cannot have people just running around saying, oh, you didn't do something that in my, whatever I believe, now I can do bad things to you. Absolutely not. Unacceptable, 100%. And that's just like the feeling. I'm like, this is horrific, and it needs to be banned. It's a human rights violation. That's the point. These are human rights violations. And there's no justification for them. That's just my opinion.
It has to be, but the condemnation has to be across the board, though. It just cannot be, you know, one or two countries. You have to have the world community standing up in unanimity. Just like when we saw the apartheid in South Africa, the world stood up in unanimity and said, this is wrong. You just simply cannot discriminate against somebody based on their race, and this is exactly what they were doing in South Africa at the time. And you just simply cannot discriminate against somebody because of their religion. Take them out and kill them and render a judgment against them based on some draconian law. You can simply cannot take a woman out and beat her. What happened to the guy? Where's that guy that was on the other end of that line? What happens to him, Pete Sake? What happens to the guy in this case?
Because the guy has to be confined
chapter number four, verse number, I forgot which one, confined in the room for a certain amount of time unless he repents. But that's a separate thing. But the problem what you are saying is different. You are telling me that we should ban all of that. But you cannot ban all of that because now you are actually going to oppress Islam and Islam become an Islamophobe. The thing is, it is Islamic and it's written in their books, in their scriptures. How can you ban this thing without banning Islam? That's my basic question.
That is a great point.
To your point, Eric, trying to get the nations of the world to galvanize, you know, against this action. That what Adam said is apropos because if we do stand up against this action, then we're actually standing up against the written scriptures of a particular religion.
Well, then what we need to do is we need to spend more.
Here goes your amendment, which says you have the freedom of religion. Now, here goes your amendment.
Exactly.
I don't know what it was, which says freedom of religion. Now, you have destroyed your amendment of America, which says freedom of religion, because now you are actually saying to a religious believer system that you cannot do certain things based on your religion because it is not moral. But they say that you have the freedom of religion in your country. Your country gives us the freedom of religion. We are implementing our freedom of religion over here.
When it violates the United States Constitution, because the principle is that your rights end where my rights begin. And when you are saying that you are violating the rights of this woman, her due process rights to a trial, and you're going to implement cruel and unusual punishments, yes, that's where your rights end. You cannot, even though if they, go ahead.
They are not in your country now, in their own.
All right. That's a great point. I agree with that. And that is a good point. But when you have enough countries stand up to say that stoning women for adultery is barbaric and it shouldn't be allowed anywhere, and that for a country that allows that, I could, you know, as a standard practice, they should be universally condemned and they should be boycotted. Yeah, I would think that the world would be able to stand up in unanimity and say that's just wrong. Whether they're Islamic or not.
I agree with that, but at the same time, you would have to determine where that practice comes from.
If it
finds its provenance in their scriptures, then like Adam was saying, you're literally telling somebody that their God got this thing wrong.
And he did.
Exactly.
He did. I mean,
yeah,
we could
cannot get the thing wrong. You have to prove that God is not a God. That's what I'm saying. You have to destroy Islam.
Right.
Not the teaching of Islam. You have to
Easy
destroy pie. Islam itself.
That's why we're here every Sunday.
If you were wrong on that, then how many other things?
Exactly.
You have to destroy the Sharia foundation, and then they kind of, the whole rest of the actual kind of thing. Down. That's why I was interested.
Well, you look at what Yusuf al-Qaradawi said, that if you get rid of the apostasy clause, Islam would have gone away a long time ago. And at the same time, and we'll go ahead and close with this idea, if you're going to say that it's okay to beat women for talking on the cell phone to some guy, if you're going to say it's okay to stone adulterous women, then what you're also going to do is you are going to say, thank you, Adam. We're going to put that up there. Then you're also going to say that it's okay for old scumbag men like me to go ahead and marry little prepubescent little girls. Go ahead and try getting that one across the world community and see if...
That wouldn't even fly in the American prisons, man.
You're exactly right. I mean, even the lowest of lows...
Ahmed would have got killed if he had sex with Aisha.
Oh yeah, they would have done more than kill him. They would have had a party with him. Okay.
You're saying that this lady was a little bit of progress because the woman has a cell phone, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Phone. They said phone. They didn't say cell phone.
Oh, it was just a phone. Okay.
You want me to play the whole video?
It was. No, we don't.
I thought you said cell phone, and if a woman who lives under. I have a cell phone. I consider that progress. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, they're letting a woman talk on the phone. I think that's progress right there in and of itself. Okay, so let's... well, that's right. So this is, it actually isn't in progress. Okay, so we're going to end it with that. Adam, are you going...
I want to promote the Apostasy Day because very few people know that.
Okay, then
so,
where to go?
This is the Apostasy Day, 22nd of August, which is today, and this started since last year. Nobody knew that. This year, some people know that. And this is in retaliation of saying that the apostasy is punishable by death in Afghanistan, Iran, Malaysia, Maldives, Burundi, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, UAE, and Yemen, pointing out to that it's a criminal offense in many Muslim-majority countries, for example, in Pakistan, a disbelief in the God punishable with the penalty under blasphemy law, adding in Saudi Arabian atheism is equating with terrorism. So you have like at least 13 countries where one way or another apostasy is a crime, and these are the countries which actually gives death punishment, and that is why we need to promote this day more and more so that the apostates who are actually in those countries and they are hidden apostates, they should be encouraged that the world is with them, that the world is with them. They know that they are there. They know that they are criminal in their own countries where they were born. World knows that they can be killed in their own countries by law because of just that they changed their religion and went out of the barbaricism of Islam. And they can be killed just for that. So please support this day and please let the world know what these people are going through.
Okay.
When they leave Islam.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Adam. Are you going live here in a couple hours to promote this, or what's that going to be about?
Yes, I will be. I will be going live in a couple of hours. That is correct. I need to go and have some food and all, and then I will be live at around 8 p.m. New York time.
Eastern time, 7 o'clock here. Okay. All right.
7 or 8 p.m. New York.
I'll go ahead and look for that. Then, anybody else got anything for the fire? Before we go. All right. Well, thank you again for coming. God bless you all. Tuesday. Don't forget. Well, it's not called Radio Free Kafiristan anymore. It's called Cross of the Crescent. We'll be back here at 5 o'clock next Sunday. I will not be in the Attila the Hun chair. Rad will be hosting next Sunday. And then the following Sunday, I'm also going to be out. And Chris Claus says that he is going to, come in and guest host on those days. So please come back next week, support the RAD, and the following week support Chris Claus. And we will see you all Tuesday, 5 p.m. God bless you all.
God bless you.
All right, we're off the air. Let me go over to Blog Talk Radio and end the episode. They stop recording.